In Colorado yesterday, the state Supreme Court tossed out a congressional redistricting plan that had been drawn up by the Republican-controlled legislature. In a 5-2 ruling, Colorado's highest court said the GOP had violated the state's constitution when it replaced a judicially drawn map of congressional boundaries with that one that had been drawn up by the state legislature. Some Democrats hope the Colorado decision will have an impact in Texas, where a very similar process has gone on, and Republican lawmakers have been in a lengthy battle with Democrats over a GOP-sponsored redistricting plan. And, of course, whichever plan is adopted could have an important impact on the next Congress of the United States and any hopes that the Republicans have to hold on to control or hopes the Democrats have to overtake them. If congressional redistricting has been an issue where you live, give us a call if you have questions about the process. As your representative changed as a result of redistricting? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us to tell us more about recent fights over congressional redistricting is Greg Giroux. He's a politics reporter for Congressional Quarterly, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Now, exactly what was at stake in the Colorado case?
Well, the Colorado case involved a redistricting plan that Republicans, after the 2002 elections, drew to improve their chances in a couple of districts their candidates had already held. But so it was basically a plan that they wanted to substitute in place or substitute for a plan drawn by a state district judge that was a little bit more favorable to the Democrats. So what was at stake here was a plan that the state Supreme Court ruled or invalidated because the court felt that the state constitution mandates only one redrawing of lines per decade, and that the plan that was in effect for the 2002 elections was that plan, and that the legislature erred in trying to substitute a more Republican-friendly plan.
Now let's go over that once again. The law in Colorado says every 10 years after the census, you redraw congressional districts, and you do it just once every 10 years. And the court said, well, we did it, the courts did it, and the legislature's plan is too late.
Right, that was the state Supreme Court's interpretation. There was some controversy over what precisely the Colorado Constitution says, but a majority of the state Supreme Court felt that the Constitution prohibits multiple redistrictings in one decade. By 5-2 majority, that was the ruling.
Now, have there been plans to appeal this decision?
Well, this was the Colorado Supreme Court is the final arbiter of state law in Colorado. However, Republicans do have an opportunity to file a motion to petition the United States Supreme Court, perhaps, to reconsider this. I don't know that that's going to happen because this most people seem to think that this was the final say because it involved a question of Colorado law.
Now, the other issue is that there could be a similar kind of case in Texas.
That's right. On December 11th, a three-judge federal court will convene a long-awaited trial and a long-anticipated trial in the far more disruptive redrawing of congressional district lines in the Lone Star State. Just as in Colorado, Republicans in Texas wanted to substitute a judicially drawn plan with one drawn by Republicans in the legislature that would benefit Republicans to a far greater extent. And that case is going to begin on the 11th.
Maximize their representation.
That's right. Unlike Colorado, which wouldn't net Republicans any seats, even if the court had said the legislature's plan was okay, the Texas plan would net Republicans up to 7 seats in that state, which has profound implications for control of the Congress.
Now, one issue that's been active, I know, in Texas, and I wanted to know if it was part of the Colorado case, has been the minority representation, which is usually an issue that's decided by the federal courts, not state.
That's right. The issue of minority representation was not an issue in the Colorado case. That case hinged on whether the legislature could redraw lines a second time. In Texas, however, that's a crux of the Democratic argument, that the plan the Republicans pushed through the Texas legislature weakens minority voting strength.
Now, Texas and Colorado are certainly the most prominent, but not the only states that have undergone redistricting battles in recent months. A lawsuit in Pennsylvania over redistricting that is going before, I think, a U.S. a federal court during this term, to the Supreme Court.
That's right, and oral arguments in that case begin the day before the big Texas case convenes on December. The Pennsylvania case will be on December the 10th, and the U.S. Supreme Court in the case Veith versus Jubilirer will kind of like revisit a ruling it issued 17 years ago that said that Well, you can make a claim of a partisan or a political gerrymander. That those can be judiciable, or we can decide them, but you have to clear a very high bar in order to prove that this plan really detrimentally affected your political standing.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And Jerry joins us on the line from Salt Lake City in Utah.
Yes, it's Terry, and
very
good program, Neil.
Thank you.
Always a good program. Here in Utah, we had an unusual situation in that it's a very heavily Republican state. Both houses of the legislature are dominated by Republicans in veto-proof majorities, a Republican governor for many years, two Republican senators. We have three congressional seats, and in 2000, a Democrat was elected in the area that represents Salt Lake City, which is about a 50-50 Republican-Democrat split. So in 2002, the legislature decided to redraw the boundaries, or for the 2002 election, and they divided the state into three portions, oblong districts, where now the Salt Lake City representative goes all the way down into southern Utah, about 300 miles, with a rural area, too. They tried to gerrymander him out of his position. In 2002, now every newspaper editorialized against it, television stations editorialized against it, the populace was mad, and in this heavily Republican state, he managed to hold on to his seat because the voters got so angry at what the Republicans did. So I think the voters really have to take a clue from this and not let any one party, whether it's Democrat or Republican, get away with this type of gerrymandering.
Is that an accurate representation of what happened in Utah there?
That's correct. He is referring to Democratic Congressman Jim Matheson of Utah, the lone Democrat in the Utah delegation.
Right.
And the caller's right. After the 2000 census, Jim Matheson won his term in 2000. The Republicans controlled the process, and they added so many more Republicans to his district. Jim Matheson barely hung on, but it just goes to show that there aren't any absolutes in this line drawing process. Jim Matheson was able to prevail narrowly, even though the legislature seriously targeted him for defeat.
And even Republican U.S. Senator Robert Bennett criticized the legislature, said it was outrageous, but it stood.
Jerry, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil. Very good program.
Thank you. Let's try now Larry, and Larry's with us from San Antonio, Texas.
How are you, Neil?
I'm very well, thanks.
I listen to your program all the time. This is a first-time call.
Well, thanks very much for getting through to us.
You bet. Just want to make a couple of comments, and I'll take the answer off the air. Having to do with Texas, by and large, the number of people that I've spoken to about the alleged gerrymandering or so-called gerrymandering, it seems to me that it's only called gerrymandering when it's not your party that's doing it. And second of all, the number of representatives that we have in Texas far outnumber the Democrat representatives, so I don't understand why they shouldn't redraw it to accurately represent the fact that Texas is overwhelmingly Republican.
Yeah, that's the crux of the argument that the Republicans, including Majority Leader Tom DeLay, have put forth. Currently, the Texas House delegation of 32 members is 17 to 15 Democratic. The Republicans see that as fundamentally unfair and not reflective of the strong Republican voting trends in the state of Texas.
Well, how do you feel about that? Do you think it is unfair?
Well, I don't take a position on that, but I'm just that is certainly the argument that we're going to see in the courts next week, that the current district plan is argued as a Democratic gerrymander that does not accurately reflect the Republican strength in the state, and the new Republican plan is designed to elect 22 Republicans and 10 Democrats, which Republicans see as more in line with the state's political leanings.
I have one more thing I'd like to say is that the screaming that you're hearing from the Democrats about what's going on is much akin to the 40 years of screaming that you heard from Republicans because the shoe was on the other foot at the time.
Right.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for the call, Larry.
All right.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I just wanted to follow up on Larry's point. Isn't this, in a lot of cases, I mean, we're talking about in Texas and in Colorado, Republican legislatures, but this is endemic to any party that gets into power in the state legislature.
Oh, yes,
not?
This is political blood sport. This is the roughest form of politics that you'll ever see. Very, very bare-knuckled form of politics, and both parties practice it. I think Republicans certainly didn't like the redistricting plan that we saw in the state of Maryland, which went from 4-4 to 6-2, including the defeat of Congresswoman Connie Morella, a Republican. This is something that both sides practice, and if you have both houses of the legislature and the governorship, in most cases you can push forth a redistricting plan that benefits your party's interests.
And national parties tend to get really interested in state legislature elections about every 10 years.
Oh, that's right, and you'll see members of Congress going to the state legislative capitals to lobby to protect their seats. They'll confer with their state legislative colleagues over what kind of districts ought to be drawn. And we will see campaign contributions made from national parties to state parties and to state legislative committees. So, yes, it's something when it's about time for the census, we'll start seeing the members of Congress paying much closer attention to what's going on in their state capitals.
Now, after a political party is if you will, the victim of gerrymandering, one presumes it might respond by running a somewhat more a conservative Democrat in a now newly Republican district, or a more liberal Republican in a newly Democratic district.
Yeah, that's true. But the technology has become so advanced that these districts that the Democrats and the Republicans are drawing in their respective states are so overwhelmingly one-sided that it becomes almost impossible to elect a liberal Republican from a district that might lean Democratic, or a conservative Democrat from a district that otherwise leans Republican. We're seeing a winnowing of the moderates in the House of Representatives. Connie Morella gone. Benjamin Gilman, a moderate Republican from New York, is gone. And a lot of the conservative Democrats in the Texas delegation are endangered under the Republican plan. We're starting to see a house of more conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats for the most part.
Some of that bloodletting, though, it's certainly done in party primaries as well.
Oh, that's true. And one consequence of drawing such one-sided districts is that the winner is unlikely to be someone from the moderate wing of a party. They're likely to be on the conservative side or the liberal side, depending on the party.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Alex, who's with us in Rochester, New York.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Alex.
Yes, our district is served by Louise Slaughter,
mm-hmm.
And for the first time probably since the city of Rochester has been founded, we have to share our congressman, or our congresswoman in this case, with the city of Buffalo. They redrew the district last year, and it looks like a headphone with the city of Buffalo, part of the city of Niagara Falls, the city of Rochester, and about a half-mile wide swath along the lakeshore of Lake Ontario, where there's mostly just summer homes. So now we have to, our congresswoman, she has to commute to Buffalo, spend a lot of time there, spend a lot of time here. I'm sure it wears her out, but we no longer have our own congressperson for a city of 250,000 people.
Yeah. Well, 250,000 people, Greg Giroux, that isn't a congressional district.
That's right. Most congressional districts have more than 600,000, 650,000 people. The challenge in New York is that it's not gaining population as rapidly as states, say, in the South or in the West. And New York lost two House seats in the reapportionment, and so a couple of members of Congress had to be eliminated. And in the Buffalo, Rochester area, more toward Buffalo, it was Congressman John LaFalce who was drawn into the same district as Congresswoman Louise Slaughter. I think the caller also illustrates some of the disruptions that come with line drawing, and it profoundly affects a lot of the voters out there. I mean, millions of voters are every 10 years at least will have to reside under new congressional lines, and many of them will have new members of Congress, and will be their cities will be drawn in with other cities that were not in their districts before.
Alex, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Greg Giroux, thank you very much for coming into Studio 3A to talk with us.
Thank you.
Greg Giroux is politics reporter for Congressional Quarterly. As I mentioned, he joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.